Thank you, Julie. You're a lifesaver. It is all you, Mike.
All right, guys. Thank you for weathering that technical difficulty, and welcome, and thank you for spending your time here today to hear how I review a PFA. So let's go ahead and get started. This client, and I went through a very purposeful exercise of not reviewing this PFA before the call. I haven't seen this PFA in 7 or 8 months at this point. I just asked Susie to pick me one that she thought was probably a difficult PFA and one that ended up becoming a client. So she chose this one, and this is the first time I'm looking at this PFA in 7, 8 months. So here we have Jason. Jason, as you can see as we scroll down here, was born in 1981. That makes him not my average client, interesting to begin with. He's married, and he has one dependent. So this is a young family with a child. You scroll down through here, his wife is a health and wellness coach. Want to know right away if she's going to be staying in that position. And Jason is a technical sales and support manager, and he earns a relatively respectable income for a young man. So the way that I review the PFAs, and I'm going to do it just like I would if I were to be looking at this myself, the first thing I look at is that first section. The second thing I scroll down to is the net worth. I want to know if this is a potential client. So he's got $3,000 in cash. He's got $45,000 in cash and savings. He's got $50 in an IRA and $45 in a 401k. Values his home in about $250. Got some automobiles. I don't truly calculate. I don't consider that to be leverageable net worth. Liabilities, he's got a little bit of credit card debt. He's got two mortgages, and he owes some money on his automobile. So his net worth is $200,000. So right away I know that there are a host of franchisors who have net worth requirements of $250 plus, and Jason's probably not going to be a good fit for those guys. So when we scroll down, it says, do you have any additional income sources? And he says, if yes, please explain. So my wife works and makes $50,000 annually. So I'm gathering from that she's going to continue to remain gainfully employed. So I scroll on down, and I look at what kind of values and motives he has. That's going to be the next section I go to. And Jason is a belonger emulator. And for those of you who know belonger emulators, you know that they love to be sold. And in most cases, they consider themselves salespeople. All right? They have a deep moral code. But these are the people who will quite often compliment you or critique your salesmanship, and it's because they view themselves as master salespeople. And what do master salespeople love? They love to be sold, right? So when I work with a belonger emulator, I know going in that I'm going to slow play everything. I'm going to be doing some takeaway stuff, and every time Jason refers to this as a sales process, I'm very quick to share with him that this is not a sales process. The franchisors will have salespeople. My responsibility is to shepherd him through this process and help him deftly maneuver through the challenges and obstacles that he's going to face, and at the end of the day, make sure he gets all the information that he needs to make a fact-based decision. But he won't hear me say at any point in this process, what's it going to take to get you into franchise today? Okay? So when you're dealing with a belonger emulator, slow play as much as possible. Some takeaways are always good, and these people generally view themselves as salespeople. So what kind of a work style is Jason? Well, Jason is a thinker. Okay, again, this is something interesting. It's unique. I don't often get thinkers. I'm normally getting people who are directors or promoters or collaborators. So this created a very interesting situation when I was dealing with Jason, right? So people who are thinkers are analytical, persistent, very systematic, great problem solvers, right? They have an eye for detail. These are very accurate people. So I know going in that I'm going to have to be really meticulous in ensuring that Jason gets all of the information that he needs. So, again, thinkers cannot stand disorganization or impropriety, right? They want the facts. They want it now. And sometimes that comes across as a bit abrasive or aggressive when they're interacting with the franchisors. Now, Jason is, so we go down to focus preference next, and Jason is aware, right?
So he is sensitive to others. He can assess opportunities quickly. He understands how people feel, right? And I found this to be true as I was interacting with Jason on an ongoing basis. So as we scroll down here, excuse me just a second, I have to put my mouse up here. So as we scroll down, what we see next is that Jason is a paternalistic leader, right? So he loves management and can sometimes be dictatorial, right? So they tend to really engender loyalty from their employees. They might have a low turnover rate, but the people tend to be very dependent on this type of a leader. So I'm thinking that Jason is going to need people around him who are maybe independent contractors or who are smart, free-thinking, or professional people, because if Jason is employing an $8 or $9 an hour person, he will have this profile would have a tendency to really sort of coddle them, and they become heavily dependent on the owner. And indeed, that was the case when I talked to him. He was really worried about what kind of employees he was going to have because he has done quite a bit of babysitting in his life. His compliance ratio is medium, which I found to be ideal. So I measure everything. And so when we look back at our clients who actually move forward, one of the consistencies that we find in their profile is that they have a medium compliance ratio. I find that folks with low compliance ratios tend to not want to follow the system, and people with high compliance ratios tend to be so dependent on me that they don't take the necessary steps to conduct their portion of this process, right? They have to do all the heavy lifting here. And so what I find is that a medium compliance ratio is sort of makes for the ideal client. Core competencies, as you can see here, this guy was just absolutely through the roof when it came to marketing and client services. I can't remember anyone I've ever seen that scored, right at 100. Jason, I'm calling that a 98, I guess. This guy is good at marketing. He's great with people. He's going to go out and talk to folks. He has absolutely no problem with that. And he's going to keep clients happy. He's very customer service oriented. So we know that we probably got a pretty gregarious / intellectual young person on our hands, right? So it's a really interesting profile, Jason. And he's not toward or away. Jason is balanced. He's very focused on his goals. He's very down to earth. He doesn't view the world through the windshield, and he doesn't view the world through the rearview mirror. He just realizes that where he is, that's where he is, and he knows where he needs to go. He's an internal. Now, internal people are those folks who sit down at a table, and they're waiting to share their information with you because they're right, and how they view the world is how the world should be, and they tend to want to make sure that you understand how that should be. Whereas an external person sits down and says, all right, here are the challenges that we face. I'm supremely interested in hearing everything you guys have to say, and I'm going to take it all into consideration and make a decision. An internal person might sit down at a table and say, here are the challenges that we face, and here's how we're going to solve them, and I hope you guys can all get on board with that, right? So task attitude, optional. I was a new Friendnet owner. I used to think that this was an absolute kiss of death, and that optionals never bought franchises. And as it turns out, as I've learned to work with them, what I've found is they actually have a higher tendency to buy than does a procedural. That might be the way I've changed things up. I'm not sure what it is. But what I've found is that I have an upfront contract with my optionals, and I have it at the moment that I go over the assessment with them. So at the very beginning of the process, right, I'm going through this profile. They're intrigued. They're excited to hear how they profiled and what it all means to them in English. And when I get to this part, I say the following words. Everything's been pretty good so far, right? Yeah. Well, the honeymoon's over. The honeymoon is over. And they tend to say, why? Right? They want to know what's going on. And I say, this is not a character flaw. It's not a negative personality trait. But we're going to have a challenge working together, I'm afraid. Not that we can't be done, but we have to have a couple agreements. I need permission to do a couple things. Is that fair? Let's talk about it. So optional people, I've found, have a tendency to want to conduct perpetual due diligence. There's always more information that should be gathered before making a decision. And I'm here to tell you right now, Jason, that when you're done with this process, you'll only have about 70% of the information you feel like you need in order to make a decision. The other 30% is what we refer to as a leap of faith. And in that 30%, it's where you're going to get bruised, and you're going to get bumps, and you're going to get scrapes. That doesn't mean you can't win. I promise you, the people who hoist the Lombardi Trophy after the Super Bowl, they feel beat up, but they just won. Okay? So when you're standing on the edge of the diving board, 70 feet in the air, toes hanging off, and it's really windy, what I need your permission to do is tell you when there's no more diving board left. Because sometimes people who profile this way don't realize it when it's at the end. So I need your permission to tell you when it's over, when there's no more information to gather, when the franchisor loves you, and you love them, and there's that one more piece that you wish was there but it isn't, I need your permission to tell you it's not there. That's the only owners know how that feels. And the other thing optionals have a tendency to do is do things their own way. And you came to us today because you needed a process for conducting due diligence. Right? You can go on entrepreneur.com. There's 3,000 franchises on there. You can take a very sort of horizontal, two-inch deep approach to due diligence. But people come to us because we drill 3 inches wide and a mile deep, not 3 inches deep and a mile wide. We're looking for oil. And the only way to strike it is to do a thorough, deep dive. All right? So can I have your permission to tell you when you're off in left field chasing butterflies? And every time I get those permissions, right? If they don't give them to me, chances are pretty good we're not going to work together anyway. But it's an upfront contract that I have permission from them to tell them when they're chasing butterflies off in left field and when they don't realize it's over. It's a great permission to have, and it's a terrific freedom. Spend a little bit more time on optionals than I meant to, but that's how I close them is I set it up on day one. All right? The next thing, and to me it's the most important thing in the profile, across the board, every single deal I've ever done, minus one, their chunk size is specific. It is the only common denominator that cuts through every other attribute of this assessment. My clients are specifics. Specifics view the world day to day, week to week, month to month. They occasionally look up for quarter to quarter, and 1 week out of the year, they look year to year. And that's January 1st through January 7th. Okay? Global thinkers, the hardcore strategists, I found are not as engaged in the process and are not as likely to move forward with a franchise. Jason is a visual. So what does this mean? I hope everyone on the call is familiar with neuro-linguistic programming. If you're not, I highly encourage you to go read NLP for Dummies or Google Tony Robbins or something like that. But Jason's communication style is he's visual. And that means he's going to have a tendency to be animated. He's going to talk with his hands, and he gets very excited. So you can see why Susie chose this profile because the very last page, business is best suited. I never look at this page ever because I don't believe that a computer can predict what businesses this client's going to look at. I have to sit down with them belly to belly and ask them a series of deep dive questions in order to get there. Now, maybe some people can. That's not how I review a PFA. Okay? So here we've got a visual, specific, optional, thinker, belonger, achiever. It's really quite an interesting character. Okay, so now I scroll back up to the very top here, and I want to know what this guy is all about, right? So I understand his profile, right? And now I want to know what he has to say in his own words. Have you ever owned a business? No. And I think about how he writes. Look at how in-depth some of his answers are here. What businesses have you looked at? Music go-round, ERA, CMIT, Sandler sales. ERA, CMIT, and Sandler were introduced to me by another franchise consultant. Uh-oh, this guy's been down the road before, right? I haven't looked into these three that far yet. So that means that what that says to me is he is working with another consultant, right? He didn't used to work with another consultant. He is working with another consultant, and he hasn't followed up on what on those concepts yet, right? So that is something that is really, really telling here. One of the first things I talk about when we get together, and I obviously build the bonding and rapport piece, but after that's there and he knows that I kind of know who he is on paper, one of the first things I say is, Jason, I appreciate your honesty here. It looks like you're working with another broker, and we highly recommend, just as we would if you were buying a piece of real estate, you only work with one broker at a time so it doesn't muddy up the water and confuse things. I'll tell you this, we are the largest, oldest franchise brokerage firm in the Twin Cities, and we get as many referrals from our clients who don't buy as those who do, and I'll make you two promises if you want to work with us. One is that you'll learn a heck of a lot for going through this process, and two, when you're standing on the edge of the diving board 70 feet in the air with your toes hanging off the edge and it's windy as hell, I won't let anybody push you off. Now we're at a crossroads. I'd love to help you. Be happy to do it. We got to work together and not against each other. So I'm not competing with another broker. If you'd like our help, we'd be happy to do it. Okay? So I don't play that game. I don't need the money. I don't need it bad enough to butt heads with somebody else in the marketplace or some, you know, mediocre tertiary brokerage firm. All right? So once that's out of the way, you can really see that he is a sales guy, right? Everything. He grew a virgin sales region. You know, he won sales awards. He won several incentive trips, right? He got to take his wife to Aruba, to Grand Cayman, right? What gets this guy excited? Winning and sales and showing off to the wife. Look where I take you, sweetie, right? You're only in your mid-20s, but I'm going to take you around the world, okay? So that's what motivates this guy, okay? Now, having gotten to know Jason, that is indeed what motivates this guy. He ended up, is there anybody out here not on mute? What I'd like to know is what concepts would you show Jason? Anybody, please feel free to chime in, unmute the phones.
InXpress.
Okay, I agree. It wasn't in our inventory at the time, but absolutely.
Oh, I forgot, yeah. Okay.
Hey, Mike, this is Gordon. I would investigate if he's actually registered with Sandler because, man, it seems like a good fit.
Absolutely, right? This is a Sandler guy. And he even put in there that he's been exposed to Sandler sales training.
Yeah. Maybe WSI.
Absolutely. Of course, WSI. What else, guys? You might think of something else we might want to show Jason?
Show him Our Town. Could show him Money Mailer.
Absolutely. That's exactly. Yes. So you guys get this guy, right? I mean, this is who he is. And now, I don't know all this just based off of assessment. I'm very careful to share that with you guys. I want to make sure that you guys hear that because at the end of the day, I think I know who he is based on the assessment, and I think I know who he is based on his answers. But this belly-to-belly meeting that we have is mission critical. And what I'm doing in that meeting is really making sure that we are right. And indeed, we were. And so now Jason is a WSI franchisee here in the Twin Cities. And in his first month out of training, he booked, I think it was $60,000 in revenue, of which he has like $6,000, $5,000 or $6,000 in recurring revenue. It is really exceptional. So it's a testament to this tool and how you use it when you're prepping for the meeting and in the meeting to make sure that you do know who they are, and it helps us introduce them to the right clients. So I'll open it up for questions.
Yeah, Mike Gordon, do you go into interests that much? I mean, hobbies? I mean, if it's, you know, WSI, you know, technical background, interest in IT, those kinds of things?
I think that when I'm looking for, if someone says that they're, I mean, obviously IT is a no-brainer for WSI, you would think from a back-end standpoint, but the front end of the business is actually, they're looking for sales guys. So when I see salespeople, I'm thinking all of those concepts. But, yeah, I do. I take a look at what their interests are, what gets them excited, and then I'm just using it to bring it up in the meeting as points of conversation, because when someone sits and types a dissertation like this, then I know when I bring it up in the meeting and I say, so tell me about sales. What's all this sales business? I mean, he is going to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, right? It's what gets him going. So you're definitely looking for those hot buttons and those report buttons. Another thing I would, real quick, I would reference, guys, commitment to being in business in the next 6 months.
Yep. That was what I was going to mention, Mike.
We measure everything here. I mean, I'm trying as best as I can to find my ideal client. And I've only ever had one client that was a 7 buy a business. Everybody else was an 8, 9, or 10. I don't look at this and think, oh, he's just blowing smoke. I look at this and I think, this guy is dead serious. If they put a 5 or a 6, when I make that phone call, one of the first questions I ask is, you know, I tell them, I said, I've never had a client actually move forward that put less than a 7 for their commitment to being in business in the next 6 months. You put 4. Why are we talking? What are we trying to get done here? Right. So I look. So the two things that cut across everything in the entire assessment process is, for me, their commitment to being in business needs to be at least a 7, more than likely an 8, 9, or 10, and they need to be specific.
Hey, Mike, did he have any kind of pain at all? I mean, I don't see nothing on here about that. You haven't mentioned nothing about that. What was his pain for wanting to leave the working world and buying a business?
This guy views himself as an entrepreneur. He makes a lot of money for other people. And he just had enough of it. And he had enough of it at a rather young age. I mean, this guy is 33 now, I guess, but he was 32 when I met him. And his wife was in her late 20s. He just knew the value that he brought to the table. And he had made a lot of money for other people and just decided, he kind of reminds me of me. I was young. I mean, I bought my first franchise when I was 28. I had to beg, borrow, and steal to do it. And he had to do the exact same thing. So he saw his value, which is interesting.
Mike, what other concepts did you present to him?
I knew somebody was going to ask me that, and I can't find him in FranConnect. And Susan's in Florida. And so for those of you who know how our business works, I have a hard time logging into FranConnect. Let me see if I can. Here he is. Okay, guys. Let me field another question, if there are any, and I'll get you guys that answer here in just a second. Any other questions?
An observation, Mike?
You may consider this to connect to that question, but do you subscribe to the theory of always showing at least one semi-absentee model?
I show semi-absentee as much or more probably than anybody does. I'm always tossing it in there. Even for a guy like this, which everything he looked at, he knew for a fact he wanted business to business. But I say, listen, here, you need something to reference it against. And that's obviously a safe step for us, the event that he does stay at corporate or go back. I did show him one semi-absentee business. It was the first thing gone. This guy was a business-to-business sales guy.
It'd be tough to financially qualify for it, too.
Yeah, for most of them. There would be a couple that would take a look at him, like an 18-8 or certainly now a nine round would look at Jason. A Max Muscle would look at Jason because they're financing in-house. No, The likelihood of me digging through Friend Connect and seeing which concepts I introduced into is very low. So I'm going to I'll send it out in an email or something. Or if anybody really wants to know, shoot me an email and I'll follow up with you. But it was all business to business stuff. It was like CMIT, Sandler, I think maybe, and WSI, and then something to my S&P.
Mike, another question?
Yeah.
Do you ask your clients, I mean, we see the financials, but do you ever ask them, what do you feel comfortable investing from a liquid standpoint? What would you feel comfortable financing, coming up with a you know, total number, and then looking at things underneath that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that sometime soon we need to have one of these conference calls on how you conduct a meeting, because the meeting is where it's all at, guys. This is only a precursor to all of the stuff that takes place in the meeting. But absolutely, the way that I preface money is, you know, I compartmentalize franchising into three compartments. It's business to consumer service, it's business to consumer retail, and it's business to business. And then once I've explained sort of the details and the role of the owner in each of those, the way that I bring money up, I say, and the good news is you're going to need about $100,000 liquid just as a general rule in any of these three various kinds of businesses. In service-based businesses, you're probably going to need about $100,000 all in. In business to business, you're probably going to need about $100,000 all in. In retail, you're going to need at least about $100,000 all in, and then you're going to need to be comfortable financing the balance. So whatever you bring to the table from a liquid standpoint, provided that your credit score is good and you have assets that the SBA can leverage, you can triple your money. So if you bring 100, you've got 300. So let's talk about that. Create a false ceiling for me around what kind of liquid infusion you're comfortable with. And so I've already kind of let them know that it needs to be somewhere in that $100,000 neighborhood, or probably not. There's not a whole heck of a lot that we can do. There's some cases where we can, but not a lot. And so when they throw the number out, I just typically triple it, and I say, okay, that'll be kind of the max project budget here. Is that number comfortable for you? It's going to cause a lump in your throat, but it has to be one that you can swallow at the end of the day. Otherwise, we're just going to end up looking at stuff that we won't move forward on. So what's the real total project cost that you're comfortable with? That's how I bring money into the conversation.
That's good. That's good. And I applaud you for omitting the business best suited part. Because I had a husband and wife team that came in, prided themselves on being different, and they both had the exact same words.
Yeah, I don't think a computer can get that done for us. I think it's a neat tool, but it's that belly to belly.
I've had the same thing where a husband and wife, we're going to do it together, had different buyer motives, yet had exactly the same best business suited.
Yeah, I think it's a flaw in the system.
You know, at the end of the day, I find that people appreciate it. And I show it to them. I say, listen, guys, this is a computer printout of what some software thinks that I should introduce you to. I think we should take it a little bit farther than that. And I flip the page over, and almost every time they thank me for doing it. And it didn't even mean anything to them, but it let them know that I want to get to know them, and I want to understand what they want, not what a computer tells me that I think they want.
And do you send a copy to every client before they come into the office?
Absolutely. People love being assessed. So any other questions about Jason? I mean, you guys hit the nail on the head. You knew what we were going to end up showing this guy. And, you know, he was who I thought he was.
Well, he's just a star sales guy. I mean, he's, like, ideal.
He is. Like, you know, he's off the charts in some interesting areas, and he also, you know, that thinker piece, he's a really, really interesting character. But he was young, had a lot of responsibility, had very little money, and he was a belonger emulator, which are, you know, sometimes, you know, they can be challenging. You don't call it out right up front. So you have to have that up front agreement that you're not going to
I'm not going to sell you anything, regardless of how desperately you want me to. You have to buy. And then he's a thinker. So, you know, you look at this thing, he's 30 years old, has very little net worth, has a family, got a responsibility, got almost a $100,000 job he's talking about quick. It really calls into question that, you know, I mean, this is a tough guy to talk yourself into driving an hour and 45 minutes to go meet, which is what I did. But at the end of the day, this is one of those guys that make it all worthwhile. Right?
And you met him where? What was the venue?
At our office in the my office in the city.
Oh, okay.
Well, but how did he find you, Mike? He's already working with another consultant. How did he happen to connect with you?
Found us online when he was Googling the other consultant.
Okay.
And it looks like he's done a pretty good job of, I mean, you must have really given him religion, Mike, because he did so much work on this assessment. And even under professional affiliations, he lists score.org as number one.
Yep. And so and that's one of the things that I played to my advantage, was I said, who's your score counselor? And he told me, and I said, call him and ask him which franchise brokerage firm he should be working with.
Oh. That's great.
Right, so the other broker didn't have a chance. It was going to be rough to punt for them, no one way or the other.
I got to believe the other broker wasn't one of the top three either. It sounds to me like he was really junior varsity.
Nope, it was a franchise broker.
Huh, that's surprising.
Yeah, but Mike, you had the face-to-face with him where the other gentleman probably did and was probably off phone work too, correct?
No, it was actually a local franchise broker, and it's a female.
I see.
And she and I are, you know, I have a healthy working relationship with a couple of the other franchise brokers in the Twin Cities. I mean, I sold franchises for years before I was a friend at her, so I know these people. This woman just happens to be my mortal enemy. And I won't belabor, but I don't know if she's ever taken dinner off of my table, but I've taken three clients from her over the last 12 months, and they've all bought. So it always makes me happy to do that for her.
Yep.
I'm the gift that keeps on giving. Any other questions about Jason, guys, or about the assessment or anything like that?
No, I'm good. You did a great job, Mike.
Yes, thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Happy to do it.
For everyone.
Tracy, I don't know what to do now, so I'm going to leave it.
Okay.
I'm going to turn it over to you.
I just want to thank everybody for dealing with our technical difficulties. And Julie, thank you for saving the day with the alternate phone number. If you could press star 9, then we can stop the recording, and then I'll get with you on how to download that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great
weekend.
Thank you all. Thanks for your time, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.